to the Leaders Unscripted podcast, where we talk about the challenges tech leaders face. I'm your host, Susan Bond, a former COO, leadership consultant, and founder of Constellary, where we support companies to develop leaders and build cohesive leadership teams. This is episode 36. Michelle Tran, Head of Strategic Partnerships, SVP at Vestwell, came to talk with me about how the intersections of being female and a person of color can make leadership challenging. We talked about her first leadership role in the fourth grade, how being first gen influenced her career in fintech, why she started NYC Fintech Women, how perceptions of Asian Americans impact how she leads, how names impact perceptions of Asian Americans, and why she started Tiger Collective with Ling Zhao and their goals. This is such a powerful episode. I know you'll learn so much from Michelle's wisdom. All right, let's go. Hi, Michelle. It's so great to see you. I guess meet you. We've never really met, but I've been following you on the internet for a while, so it's nice to officially meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I'm so excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. And we know a bunch of people in common because of FinTech Women, which you created, and we will talk about. But that's how I kind of we'll talk about that briefly. But that's how I know of you and your incredible work you do with it. So, can you, for people who don't know you, aren't familiar with you, can you just give a little bit of a background about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am all things super passionate about women in fintech, access for folks through technology. And that has really driven kind of my story and what I do. So a little bit of background. I am the co-founder of NYC Fintech Women, which is a 10,000 plus member organization, primarily based in New York, given the name NYC Fintech Women. But we're really everywhere. So we're in San Francisco, Seattle. We just had an event in Chicago. I'd love to start something in Atlanta because it's becoming a really big fintech hub. And we had an event in London very recently as well. So we're going global. But our mission for NYC Fintech Women is to empower, connect, and promote women. So those three words of empower, connect, and promote are super important and what we do and drive our mission and what we do day to day. In addition, my day job, I am the head of enterprise sales and channel partnerships for a retirement platform called Vestwell. And so that kind of goes back to where I'm passionate about providing access through technology. And so what we do at Vestwell is really help small businesses offer retirement solutions to their employees in a really digital forward way. And we all know kind of in that, you know, financial services, retirement space, if you don't make it super easy, super digital, people are not going to do it. And for me, what was really important is I'm a first gen in the U.S. and so really have seen the benefit of having retirement options available to me in my career. So was really excited to join Vestwell a couple of years ago to help them supercharge in the space of retirement.
Wow, that's such a great background. Too interesting too, being first gen and retirement plans. Maybe that was that something that was different and, you know what I mean, like unusual or something unexpected?
Oh, totally. Like, so when I say first gen, my grandparents immigrated from China to Vietnam, and then my parents immigrated from Vietnam to the US. And how they did it was literally my grandfather paid gold bars and put my dad on a boat and set him off at the age of like 17, not knowing where he was going or if he's going to see him again. I mean, that story is incredible. I can't even imagine doing that to my kids, like go off and find something new, but it was, you know, they had to. So for me, you know, when they came over here, you know, my parents started a restaurant. And as a restaurant, you know, you typically work really, really hard, but you don't have those kind of more traditional saving vehicles available to you. And so, you know, for me, as I went through a more traditional career, I started at Merrill Lynch and then went to BlackRock and all these different places. It was like, oh, what's this 401k? What's this saving that can actually save money for the future? And for me, that was new and pretty cool. I was like, okay, well, I get it kind of like, you know, you set it. It's out of your mind and it goes into this bank account. And, you know, when I retire sometime in the future, I'll be able to actually live on it. Whereas like my parents never thought about that because they were trying to just live day by day. And so for me being like first gen and having access to something like that, we just want to make sure like, you know, we get it out in the hands of a lot of others because there's a lot of disparity when it comes to, you know, how much are you saving for retirement as a female, as a minority? And those tend to be like, if you're a small business, you're a restaurant. Who's working at these restaurants, who's working at these small businesses, making sure that they have those options available to them.
Wow. I mean, from gold, a future in gold bars to retirement funds. What an incredible journey. I love hearing people that sounds like an incredible story that I would want to read about your family.
We put it all into a book. Yeah. So we did, we did full interviews with my grandparents, with my grandfather, especially before he passed. And it's not like you can't buy it on Amazon type of book, but it's for our family. But it's called, our journey home. So it's a really cool story.
That's so great. Family history, capturing that is so important. You know, what happened to our ancestors and how we got here. And anyway, fascinating. I love it. I have aging parents, so I'm thinking a lot about these things, you know, and future generations and all that. Well, so you might've sort of hinted at this, but I'd love to know a little bit more about like how you got into fintech and what interested you. Was it the retirement aspect or was it something else that kind of got you into it?
Yeah. So for me, it was, you know, again, going back to, you know, being a first generation and Asian American, my parents, and this is very much the case for a lot of Asians in the US, your parents tell you, you should be a doctor, you should be a lawyer, you should be, you know, in finances, something super stable, be an accountant, right? Like that's the golden rule. So for me, I went into financial services. So I started with Merrill Lynch in London, and then worked kind of my way through BlackRock and the iShares business. And I was deep in more traditional financial services. I was really, you know, fortunate to get an opportunity to work with robo-advisors when they first came out in 2015. And that was kind of the first time everyone was like, hey, robo-advisors are going to take over the world, right? We're not going to have any more financial advisors, no humans involved. Everything's going to be super automated. And so I got an opportunity to say, okay, well, what's our play here? How do we work with robo-advisors? Because what they're doing at the end of the day is giving people who don't have, you know, the same capital as those high net worth individuals access to investing. And so making investing really easy. And so from our viewpoint, we really wanted to say, okay, well, what are they doing? How are they changing the landscape? And that's how I got into fintech, was talking to all these different robo-advisors. And to me, it was like an aha moment. I was like, this is so cool. Like you're using technology and you're just making it so easy for, you know, my neighbor, for my kids to say, I want to invest $1,000 and I am able to, and I can. So that's how I got into fintech. And then since then, for me, what I always look for and what I find really interesting is how does technology provide access to those who don't typically have access? So it's either, is it underbanked or those who don't necessarily know how to invest or, you know, or want to start investing. And that's what I think has been really cool happening over the last 10 years is just technology has just supercharged the way people can get into capital markets.
Wow. Yep. So true. I love that. How fintech can provide access to people who don't have it. I think that's probably something from the outside, we might step over that. Those of us who are not primarily in fintech, we might not recognize that.
Yeah.
But how important that is.
It's literally, you know, one of the companies I joined after Apex Clearing, what was really cool about them was that you could open an account, an investment account in like five seconds and then start investing within minutes. And before you have to go to, you know, a firm and then you have to fill out PDFs and paper. You have to send a copy of your ID. You have to, you know, this is like way back, you send a check over or like wait for the wire. But it's like literally you pick up your phone and you're like, all right, cool. Now I'm in Microsoft or I'm in Apple. Like, can you imagine like you're waiting for the bus? And that really sets, you think about like those who then want, who continue to build wealth, generational wealth, the fact that they have access to these markets. It's really cool. You know, if you look from the inside of like how that kind of just changes the landscape.
Totally. Well, I'm curious, was being a leader something you saw for yourself? You know, when, let's say earlier and at some point, you know, earlier in your career, was it something you strove for?
Yes. I will go back to when I was in fourth grade and I started our babysitters club in our neighborhood. I don't think we actually ever babysat anyone because we were too young. But for me, I was like, okay, how do I do something? How do I drive a team? But yes, it's like, how do you have impact, right? So how can you drive strategy? And for me, that also, it, you know, kind of has determined where I've gone in my career in terms of, you know, I was at BlackRock for many years and going to smaller firms because for me, I love rolling up my sleeves. I love helping others really see how they can be a big impact to the firm and then driving strategy for a firm. So definitely, I think it's probably in me. And I think, you know, in the future state, probably at some point we'll want to be, you know, kind of running my own company. That's my plan.
Yeah. I love to ask that question. Actually, on the podcast is this week when we're recording it, it's my story. And I never thought about leadership. I mean, I just never did at all. And I love it when I hear some people did, some people didn't. Some people fell into it accidentally. I fell into it because I was trying to have impact too, right? So I think you can be intentional about it or unintentional and get into leadership, both because you're trying to have a positive impact on something.
Yeah, I think that's where it comes from. It's like, how do you help drive the story, right? Like we, at the end of the day, a lot of us want to drive our own story. And so how can we do that? And yeah, I think it's not like, you know, starting a babysitter's club at fourth grade. I was like, well, I want to be a, you know, a leader and lead this. But I think it's kind of that sometimes it's inherent in folks that, you know, they just feel the need to have a little bit of a bigger voice. And so that's where it's really interesting to hear that too, as like people like fall into leadership and just, you know, they don't realize that they're just such great leaders, and then they, you know, rise through the ranks or, you know, really have a great following. But I think everyone is a leader in some way. And it's just, you know, how do you have that greater impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that sentiment, you know, and on this show, I talk about leadership as titled roles, because I think it's different, you know, because the mechanisms are different and the challenges that you face are slightly different. But I 100% agree, everyone can be a leader. You know, like, I don't like the question, like, is there a leadership seat? And some people can do it and some people cannot. And I'm like, that's not interesting to me, because I just don't believe that that's true, right? Lots of people can be leaders. And that is, in fact, a huge mission. You know, as you and I've talked a little bit about, is like what does a leader look like, is a huge mission of mine and a huge part of why I started the series. Well, so I'm curious about, how did you get into leadership? You know, once you got into like the professional career, I guess, fourth grade aside, which I love that, love the initiative. Did, you know, how was that first leadership role? Were you tapped? Did you strive into it? Were you promoted into it? How did you get into that first leadership role?
Yeah, I was tapped. And so I think a lot of it is just digging in, showing, you know, one, of course, that you're doing good work and that you have impact, but then you also have to ask for it, right? And that's a lot of what people just don't do, is asking for it, because, you know, we're afraid to ask for it or whatever. But I, you know, for my manager, I sat down and said, hey, this is, you know, let's talk about our, you know, our 3-year track or our 5-year track. And it was, hey, I want to build a team. I want to manage a team. That's really important to me as a next step. So tell me, like, what are the things that I need to do in order to get there and being able to show that? And I think that the first thing is really asking, making sure it's out there and it's known that you want to head in that direction. And so that was kind of like the first role for me. And it was a small team. You know, I didn't get like 60 people or anything, but, you know, a lot of it was, hey, how do you drive this strategy? How do we impact the market? And so for me, it was really like making sure I had the business case to tackle the market and to build the team for it.
And what were those early leadership roles like for you? Were they exciting? Were they scary? You know what I mean? Like, what was it like in those early days? You know, because you've been in leadership roles for quite a while now. What was it like in that early part?
I think both, right? So they're like both super exciting, because you're taking on, you know, a new challenge, but it's also scary. Am I doing this right? Am I helping the people out? And I, you know, I think that's ongoing, making sure that you drive, you know, you have the business bottom line, like that is your number one goal. What is my goal in terms of driving, you know, and I've been in sales roles, so it's always numbers based, right? How have we hit a specific number? But then there's great people who all help underneath it. And how are you helping each of those people achieve 100% of what they can, and also helping them make sure that they're thinking about that next step, right? And so that's kind of, I think, the scary part, because really, how do you help extract the best of them? But that's also the fun part, right? And you really develop these great relationships with folks who are like, oh my gosh, thank you for, you know, helping me guiding me through, you know, difficult times, and helping to be a sounding board or, you know, kind of helping me clear the air with stakeholders, right? And that's the job of a manager and of a leader, to say, okay, let me just take on some of these difficult conversations for you, and making sure that, you know, we have the buy-in from everybody. And those are hard things to do for, you know, kind of everybody on the team.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, I'm all about humans and, you know, helping humans develop and grow. And it's exciting, but it's also scary. It's also like, did I do the right thing? Oh my God, did I make a mistake? Did I hamper their career? Did I harm them in some way? I don't know about you, but I have thought about that, you know, especially in my early days of being a manager and a leader. Yeah. I cared so much, but I worried that I was potentially not helping.
Also too, like, okay, well, so great. We have great people. And then sometimes you don't have great people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what, like, and that's always that, I think that's really hard, is making sure you, like, when you take action on someone that doesn't, you know, it's not living up to what they're supposed to do, like, that gets at you too, that, you know, you don't want to cause harm long-term, but you also know that, hey, it's just not a fit right now, or the right team. Those are the hard parts too. I think, you know, the challenging part of being a leader, but I think it's been a lot of fun, right? It's like, you really get to set strategy. You get to have a seat at the table. You get to have a voice on how is that business progressing. And I think that's where, as folks think about leadership roles and whatever type of company they're in, you know, either bigger companies or smaller companies, that's where, you know, just making sure you're super vocal is really important, right? That visibility and being heard is really important as a leader, and taking ownership and having an opinion, right? Then being able to go out there and say, okay, I think this is the way that I think the business will succeed, and putting a plan in place, but being very vocal about it.
I love that you say that, because I see so many people who do incredible work and they're so focused on the results that they think, well, the work will just speak for itself. But in fact, in some type, right, it becomes invisible and they don't speak up. And those intersections, right, of who we are, right, will influence that. And then they don't speak up and their work is sort of less visible than it might be for other people who are speaking up, who may or may not be doing great work.
Yes. And there always are those people.
there definitely are. So I love that you talk about that. You know, I don't know that I was always very vocal about what I was doing. I think I got lucky in many ways, you know, that my yeah. work was seen. And but I don't know that I did a great job at making my work visible or sort of call promoting my work. And that's something I look back and I think, that's something I would tell younger me. Like, don't be afraid to speak it out loud. It's okay to share what you're doing, you know, to share the impact you're having.
Yeah. Put aside the fear of bragging, put aside any type of what you've been taught as a kid. Like, you just, especially females, especially minorities, you have to promote yourself all the time. And it's part of this, and it's hard for a lot of us, right? To say, and I've even experienced, even these days too, you know, I was writing a LinkedIn post about something where I got recognized, and it literally took me 2 months to write it when it should have taken me 5 minutes, because I didn't want to come off as too braggy, but I wanted to showcase people who have helped me along the way. I was tagging 20 people, you know, all those things. I was like, you know what, just do it. And what happened, it got erased, so I had to redo it. And I literally did it in like minutes instead of editing something. But like, the promotion piece is hard for folks. And that's something we talk about a lot at NYC FinTech Women. And that's in our mission for a very specific reason, is that you need to brand yourself. You need to promote yourself. And others need to help you in that as well. So the amplification effect of promotion is huge. So one thing that we've put in place, and I tell everyone, is try to amplify someone at least once a week, right? Like, you know, very easily share, what is Susan doing? What's her podcast doing? And hey, she had Edwina on. So you're doing a double amplification there, right? Like, just getting that out to my network and then getting your names out there will just have this waterfall effect. And so it's inherent. We have to do that work.
I love that. The tears in my eyes, like, amplify one person a week. Such great advice. That it is incredible. And the power of that, not only just amplifying ourselves, but amplifying somebody else, like the collective, what we can do together. Yeah. Love that. Okay. So I'm curious about, how does being an Asian female influence how you lead? And I don't know, maybe if first gen influences it too, how does that influence how you lead?
I think it does, right? Because, you know, one, Asian Americans just tend to be, you know, we've been tagged as the model minority, a little bit more submissive, a little bit quieter, you know, self-sacrificing, you know, people tend to think of Asians as good workers, not as good leaders. So there are a lot of inherent issues when it comes to showing equality in Asian leaders in the space, right? I think something like asset management has something like 7 to 19% of Asians in executive roles, while we make up close to 30% of the total industry and other roles total. So, and it's across everything, law, tech, you name it. And it's because of that, because Asians don't necessarily get seen as leaders. And so I've really had to learn to be vocal, going back to that, because they, you know, a lot of people just have a subconscious of, okay, well, you know, Asian Americans are a little bit quieter. I'm not very quiet generally. So I will, you know, for me, it's that has impacted me to say, okay, as an Asian American, I need to speak up more. People don't expect me to speak up. I need to speak up more. Right now, through my work at Vestwell, I work specifically within the retirement industry, and I have met two other Asian female sales leaders, and that's it. So out of the full retirement industry, I've only met two others, and they're, you know, kind of heads of their roles, and they're fantastic, but they also speak up, right? So again, it's driving, okay, how do people perceive Asian Americans? And then what do I need to do to really make sure people understand that, you know, do the extra work to, so they can hear me and that there's vocalization and invisibility. Because a lot, you have to combat a lot of those stereotypes in the space. And that's why we don't see a lot of Asian leaders, Asian female leaders.
Mm. Well, yeah. And are there any other challenges that you face, you know, as an Asian female leader that, you know, some lessons you've learned that we haven't sort of discussed so far?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot in the space where, especially, like, you know, in financial services and retirement industry, diversity itself is really tough. You know, there's definitely a lot of firms that are trying and being very intentional about hiring and getting the right leader makeup. But it's difficult because it goes back to, okay, who's going to school? Who's starting these industries? I recently just, you know, was looking to hire a pretty senior role on my team. And I told our people's team, I was like, look, I want a really strong, diverse pipeline. I want to make sure I'm talking to everyone across the board, different experiences, different makeups. And unfortunately, just because I wanted to get very specific within the retirement industry, I couldn't get very diverse. And that means that started way back when, right? That you don't have the right, people aren't just getting the ability to come into the industry. And so for me, it's like my job then I see is, hey, how do we get diversity in? And that's a challenge. That is a really big challenge of not just being Asian American, but as a minority and getting into specific industries is how do we help and be super intentional about getting folks in? I think other challenges I've seen as being kind of an Asian leader itself too is, again, going back to like perception that people have of Asian leaders, where, you know, I read recently that Asians tend to get tapped into like CEO roles or other roles when companies are going through distress or they're going through decline. And the reason why is that they think Asians are more self-sacrificing. And so they will go into these roles and be like, okay, we're going to do everything we can do. And then I'll throw my hands up if I need to. And again, it goes back to this, you know, just very inherent long perception about Asians. The model minority concept, you know, that's not new. That came out years and years, decades ago, but it sticks with us, right? Like even all the way through to like college admissions, Asian Americans kind of have fit into this model minority. And we kind of play both cards. Either we're not considered a minority and we're considered, you know, good workers and good students, or we fit into the minority bucket with everyone else. And so we kind of just, we have to bridge both. And some people, it's a fungible minority class for us. And I think that's come sometimes a bit difficult when it comes to thinking about, you know, Asian leaders in the space.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's so fascinating, but not surprising about CEOs, Asian leaders getting tapped as CEOs when they're going through a turnaround, a really difficult situation because of those beliefs. Although self-sacrifice, this is a really hard thing. We need somebody who will just kind of take it on the chin and pull us through, right?
Yeah. It's really interesting. Just if you look at the pure numbers too, of like the number of, you know, and they're usually single digit numbers. So like, I don't even have to say what the numbers are. They're usually single digit numbers of the percentage of Asian Americans who are in leadership positions. And that's tech. I think, you know, in law, it's like 5%. So in all these different industries, Asian Americans are just not being tapped to be leaders. because of this perception. And so that's why it just keeps on going back to like, how as a young child or someone that's growing up, how do we are very cognizant of this? And then what are the very specific steps that we need to take to combat that stereotype over time? And it's a hard challenge to battle. There's a lot of inherent perceptions, and part of it is just talking about it too, and getting it out there in the space. And I, you know, with COVID happening a couple of years ago, it coming from China, what we saw the past couple of years is a lot of, you know, kind of a lot of racism that was happening against Asian Americans, a lot of crime. You know, New York was hitting it all across the board, San Francisco. They were just targeting Asians because there was this belief that, you know, we brought COVID over, which is not true. I'll just say that very specifically.
Yep.
But, you know, and that's kind of what spurred me. So also, you know, so one of the things that as we're talking, you know, I meet other Asian leaders in the space, and last night I spoke to a ton of them, is that we just need also more community around each other to help talk about these conversations, and then to begin to normalize them more and continue to have more vocal conversations about it. And there's a lot of really cool groups now, like Gold House and Asian Hustle Network, Hyphen Capital started to really focus on Asian founders. And so all these different mechanisms are starting that are really kind of bringing up the conversation, and we just need more of it.
That's great. I will make sure I'm making a note to myself. We'll make sure to put those resources in the show notes so that we list those. I wasn't familiar with any of those, but it's great to have those resources out there. Like, what are the resources that exist to help this group of folks? And thinking about that, I mean, I understand that you are starting or have started an initiative called Tiger Collective, which is a platform to share Asian female leader stories. Can you tell me more about the impetus for starting it and what you hope to accomplish?
Yeah. So Tiger Collective really started to share stories. And eventually we also want to help these leaders in ways, either, you know, investing in capital or connecting them with the right firms. Because again, we need to share more of these stories. And so Tiger Collective came from the name itself is last year was the year of the tiger. And as we think about in the Asian culture, kind of what does a tiger represent? We really want to make sure that we're very loud and strong in the space. And that's why we named it Tiger Collective. So it's an initiative that we're starting. So Liang Zhao and I, she is the CEO of Vansory, which is a fintech PR company. She was born in China and came over to the US. So we are kicking off a couple of things. So one is a podcast called Her Name Is. And specifically that title, Her Name is because a lot of women who come from Asia, come from different places, they tend to change their name. Their Asian name won't resonate as well in the US, where it's hard for people to pronounce. And you see, or they were named something in Asian name in the US and they can't pronounce it. And so they changed it to, you know, Mary or something that people understand. And our perspective is why, right? Why have people changed their name? It's because they wanted to assimilate. My parents named me Michelle for a very specific reason. It's because I was first gen. They loved the song Michelle from the Beatles, and they wanted an easy name for folks in the US to pronounce. My aunts who came over from Vietnam, I have seven of them, and they all had, you know, Asian names, and they all changed them. We have the Eileens, the Shannons, the Tiffany's, you know, they came over in the 80s. So you get where, you know, all these names came from. Patty, Suzanne, but those are all, you know, what they did was they changed their name. They came over here to make it just super easy. So that's what the podcast is meant, just to tell a story of what is your name and what is your journey and your story as an Asian leader. We're going to showcase a number of interviews too on Asian leaders. So it's kicking off later this year. So we're really excited. So stay tuned.
I love that. Can I just say one thing? Because I want to talk a little bit more about other things you're doing. But, you know, I've heard a lot about like the assimilation and why they did that. And what I have another friend whose parents wanted to name their daughter Snow White because they saw it from a book, and the older daughter said, no, not Snow White. That's going to be a hard name. Like, here's a better name. But I think we forget, those of us who are like, my family has been here forever. I'm white. You know what I mean? All those things. I think we forget how much names, the power of names and the challenges that folks, particularly who are first gen from other countries, really face in trying to assimilate, trying to like be successful in a country like this.
Yeah. And it's, I think from like a parent perspective, right? As you come to this new country, you want to set up your kids for success, and they're going to go into schools and they're going to, you know, they want to make sure that they blend in, because that's what assimilation is. And that's their number one goal, is for assimilation. You know, little things like, I remember my parents sending me to school with Asian food, and I was like, nope, I want peanut butter and jelly. I want turkey sandwiches, right? I want to be like everybody else. And now as I look back on it, I'm like, you should embrace it. Embrace the cultural differences, right? That's the only way that not only are you going to embrace it yourself, but to share and expose others to cultural differences. And that's the world that we live in. We live in a very culturally diverse world. And we only, you know, we learn so much from each other and from our differences. And so it really kind of, the naming perspective is really important, because if you're not exposed to all these different names, then you expect everyone to be Mary, John, and Mark.
And have the same beliefs and the same attitudes and bring the same thing. Like, I really believe that I love this. I mean, I'm like, I cannot wait to listen to this, because I love that diversity. I really believe that we're better together when we acknowledge and embrace our differences, rather than trying to all be the same or blend in. I'm just not interested in that. And there's evidence, there's research that shows.
The more diverse you are, the more successful companies are. And that's where, you know, in the past couple of years, we've seen a lot of focus on DEI and bringing leaders to focus on DEI. That just needs to be done more. And it's been a hard road for DEI too. You know, what I read recently was that a lot of those head of diversity, head of inclusion roles are actually being restructured and rethought of, because it's hard to get that big change, to get all those stakeholders to change the way they think. And so it's been a hard road, but we just need to continue to focus it. Like, we need to continue to talk about it and making sure that people are really intentional in all parts of business when it comes to diversity.
Absolutely. And in fact, I just read something. If I can find the article, I'll put it in the show notes. I just read an article that talked to that, right? That it's been a hard bit of time for DEI. Those roles are getting let go of. They're getting restructured. Mm-hmm. I interviewed a great DEI guest, and and we didn't publish it because their role was eliminated, which made me so bummed. It was an incredible interview, incredible leader. But what they were saying in this article is that they understand why it was happening, but the results show that when you continue to do that work and you invest in it at the highest leadership levels, particularly the senior leaders, but C-suite, that there are massive results on it. They're still showing the results for that. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully they will hear, and that we will continue to have those things. So besides the podcast, is there anything else, other initiatives or things you're hoping to accomplish with a Tiger Collective?
Yeah, we want to tell stories, and that'll be in print and shared in a digital format. And then our long-term goal is really to potentially raise capital and help these female founders, Asian founders in general, take that extra step and get into the market as an entrepreneur. Where we're really seeing is there's the leadership component, right? And all different company levels and different company sizes of leadership. And then there's also a founder conundrum. So Asian Americans, again, risk averse. We've been taught to be risk averse. And so you're starting a new company is a very risky thing. Is it going to succeed? How am I going to get money in? How long will it take? Right? Again, we're supposed to be doctors and lawyers and all things stable. And so being a founder, so how do we help de-risk that journey? How do we de-risk that step and getting more Asian founders in market? And so that's a longer term goal for that. We're, you know, probably a couple of years out for us, and maybe we'll fast track. But that is a goal of ours, is to really say, okay, how do we help de-risk that process for a lot of Asian founders or Asian leaders who want to be founders, and help them through that journey and help them get more money? On the female side, you know, the stat for institutional investing into female founders is 2%. And it's actually gone down in the past year to, I think, 1.7, 1.9, whatever the number is, it's ridiculously low. And so, you know, and for minorities, female minorities who are female founders, the number is even lower, right, in terms of getting VC money. And so would love for Tiger Collective to be a big change mechanism in that space, to say, you know, let's invest in more Asian founders. So Hyphen Capital, run by Dave Liu, is a really great example. And he's tapped into a number of great Asian leaders too, to you know, kind of fund his portfolio and fund his funds and look for Asian leaders. But that's just one example, right? And that's where we need to just continue to do more of that. Similar to how there's a lot of now new VCs focused on female founders. we need to do that for the Asian community and bring them more into the fold and build some structure and process for them to really understand, and also maybe potentially get them to the bigger names, right? Like the Sequoias and the Kleiner Perkins and all the others, where they should also have a focus on Asian founders.
Yeah, I mean, I love all of that. It's so great. It's so inspiring. Again, my mission is around to change how we see leadership, who gets to lead. It's so important. When you started your career, was identifying as female and Asian, like, is that something you really thought a lot about, like how you presented yourself in the world? Was that something that you thought about always from the very beginning, or did that change?
I didn't. I didn't think of myself as, okay, how do I think about my cultural differences? What are the challenges I need to think about, you know, being intentional? You know, that obviously, I think that comes after years of being in this space. And I wish I did. I wish I was a little bit more aware of it when I started my career. And that's also the goal, right? Like, I love what you're doing with your podcast. You're like, you're just getting different faces out there and getting different voices out there. And if I heard this podcast when I was, you know, 22 and starting my career, I might have a different perspective on how do I need to drive my career? How do I need to behave in the workplace? And so, no, I definitely didn't. I will say though, I've always joined, you know, kind of the women networks at work and driven a lot of initiatives at women networks. That's always been a core of what I've believed in, is getting the female voice out there. So very fortunate to be at firms that where they had those opportunities to be part of, you know, the Women's Initiative Network or the women's group. At Vestwell, we started the female ERG program, and it's called Women at Vestwell Elevated. And so for us, that's really important to say, okay, how do we come together, give you a lot of information, making sure that, you know, you are set up for success, that we give you exposure, that you're speaking, that you're, and that you have people to talk to within the firm, and you know that it's okay for us to all be together. So I think it's really important to have those communities and networks. And, you know, another reason why I started NYC FinTech Women.
Yeah. Was there a moment when you recognized, you know, like, I need to consider both of these, what we might think of as like intersections, right? You know, or was it more of like a slow burn that you recognize the influence of those things and that you might want to consider it?
I think it was a slow burn, especially as, you know, as you go through a career and you become more senior, and you know, sometimes you lose out on opportunities, sometimes you win opportunities. And I think particularly when you lose out, you're like, why? Like, what, like, who else is in that pool? You know, and there's some things that become very obvious, both like as an Asian, as a female. And there was, you know, as for NYC FinTech Woman, there was a very particular moment of why I started NYC FinTech Woman. It was like, you know, I was in a meeting, and it was, you know, all the things of being interrupted and taking the pitch and all those things. And this is a while back, but I wanted to find a community of women in fintech who I could commiserate with, who could help me with that conversation. And then also additionally, you know, kind of help me and help me find the sales and help me find the deals, right? Like, we're just talking about this last night. So another thing I'm starting, which is very early in infancy, is
you're busy. Busy.
So I don't golf. I go to the driving range. I've maybe played one or two games in my life. But what I realized too is that there are always so many different golf games happening. And it's happened like three or four times this year where there's big conferences that we're going to, and either, you know, it's, you know, another group, and they're just not asking women to play golf. It's because they don't think we play. And unless someone, like, they know someone plays, they're not going to ask them. I was asked very last minute to fill a spot on a foursome. I was like, well, why didn't I get this invite when you were inviting people like a month ago? Right. And so for me, I do think there's a lot of benefit to meeting men where they are. And so part of that is they do a lot of golfing. So how do we build the community for us to meet them where they are, but at the same time, build our own golfing community, right? And so I was talking to a bunch of ladies last night. And so we're going to kick off something this fall in San Francisco, where we're going to get a small group together and do it, you know, every quarter, where we're going to have someone come and teach at a driving range, you know, swings, and it's a good place for us to hang out for a couple hours and get to know each other and build, you know, a network and kind of continue to build community through it. So we'll see where that goes, but I'm really excited. I'm excited to learn how to really golf myself.
I mean, I love this. I have one more question before we go, but I love hearing just from fourth grade you all the way to now, like, it's clear so many starting initiatives and wanting to not just lead for you and your betterment, but for the betterment of other communities. And like, oh, that is impact. It really, really is. Like all the tears, I always cry on the show. I'm other people. I'm like, I'm the one who tears up. It's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful. I love what you're doing and you have a lot of energy and I love that. So what advice would you give to Asian females who want to give into, you know, get into leadership? Or what advice would you have given to, you know, if you go back to younger you, what advice might you give?
I would say, you know, kind of a couple things. One is vocalize what you want and do it often. Make the ask. And continue to ask for what you want, either it be the position, the money, and don't wait. And I think that's one thing that I did early in my career a couple of times was I just waited, right? Like, again, I do good work, it'll show for itself and they'll tap me and move me up. That doesn't happen very, you know, that happens, but you also have to really put a stake in the ground and don't be shy about it, right? I don't, you know, ask in the right way, but you have to make the ask. And then the second thing is, to really tap into your community. Like as a younger, you know, earlier in my career, I wasn't so thinking about, okay, how do I build relationships with the firm? How do I network? And networking is scary. It's people just, you know, it's hard, especially for those who are not extroverted to go out. One of the things that we say at NYC FinTech Women at all of our events is you have to meet 5 women. And we say that very specifically because then it gives people a number to hit. And it also gives them an excuse to go meet other people. Like, hey, that woman on stage there told me I have to meet 5 people. So I feel more comfortable just walking up to someone and saying, hi, my name is. And that's really important as you're building out, everything's through networking. Everything is through the people that you know, right? And finding your next job, finding, you know, kind of the sales efforts, making sure that your team is running well. It's all about networks. And also these people become, you know, your personal board at the end of the day too. And so who are the people that you tap into who can give you a little bit of advice, right? Like I call Edwina on things and I call Michelle O'Connor on things to help. Philippa and I spent hours on the phone together talking about our careers and our companies and our challenges that we're having. And we get aha moments when we talk to each other. And it just having that tight group of folks, but you have to get there by meeting people and networking. And those are the things I would have started early in my career.
Oh, that's great. That's really great advice. Thank you so much for coming on today. I learned so much and I really feel inspired by what you're doing and your mission. And yeah, thank you. It was really great to hear about your story and what motivates you.
No, thanks for having me. And hopefully eventually we'll bring Ladies Who Golf to Detroit.
Love it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Leaders Unscripted. I hope you found Michelle as insightful as I did. You can learn more about Michelle's work in the show notes. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn, at our website, constellaryhq.com, or subscribe to my Substack, Susan's Field Notes, where I talk about all things leadership. Make sure you follow on your favorite podcasting platform to hear our next episode. See you there.